I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council work session for May 6, 2025. And pleased to have Chief Stewart, Greg Stewart, from the South Davis Metro Fire here to dazzle us with his annual report.
Nice, dazzle. I told my wife as I was leaving the house tonight, I said I'm more nervous to talk to this City Council than any of them that I associate with, because this is the city I care about your opinion the most, because I live here. So hopefully this will go well tonight. So I'm proud to be here tonight, council, mayor, and staff, to just present our annual report. This is a lot of work, collaboration between a lot of different people on the department, but ultimately the product that you see in front of you was done by a firefighter. So it's that, to me, that's super cool. So I thought what we would do is I'll give you a little background on myself and give you the highlights of this report. We could each take a paragraph and read the whole thing, but I'll give you the highlights instead. And then I thought it might be valuable if we just open it up for Q&A if you guys have any questions for me. So a little bit about myself. I grew up, most of my growing up years were up in Cache County, and that's where I started as a volunteer firefighter in 1995. So in 2001, I had the opportunity to come down here for a part-time fire job, and then ended up buying a house and moving down here because I love the area, and I wanted to ultimately serve where I lived, because when you're a volunteer fire department or firefighter up in Cache County, you lived and you served the people that you lived in the community with. And so that really instilled that sense of community for me, and that's stayed with me my entire career and life. And I, you know, encourage my family to be a part of the community. And so that's the main thing for me as fire chief, is I want this city to feel like the fire department is their fire department. Like sometimes we struggle with being a special service district, feeling like the city's think that we're their fire department, but we're your fire department and I'm your fire chief. And if you ever have questions, let me know. So if you open up to the first, the message from the chief, I just kind of go through some things that we went through this last year. We had some high-level retirements with a couple of chiefs that had 30 years of experience plus leave the department. So that was a lot of institutional knowledge and a lot of nice safety net for us and the staff to have them and their background. And what we learned from them will carry forth since, you know, with them being gone. But let's keep up here so anybody in the audience can see what we're doing. So I talk in here in my message about just three things that we've focused on this last year. One of them, the main thing being recruitment and retention, just keeping quality firefighters for this community. We don't want to see them leave to go to another department for a few couple bucks extra. We've trained them. They know the area, they know the demographic, and we want to keep them right here for you. So the way we do that is, you know, we do job fairs and we get people interested. We'll bring people in for just kind of a department barbecue or whatever, so they can get to know the department, and potential recruits can come and see what we're all about. And that's worked out really good for us. The other thing that we've started to do the last few years when we hire people is we bring them on early before they go to Recruit Academy, and they work with the crews for about a month and a half before they go. We invest to send them to Recruit Academy, and they really get to learn the department and see if it's a good fit both ways. So it's been really nice. A couple of the other things, we've been really focused on cancer and cancer prevention and screening. Firefighters are 14% more likely, or 9% more likely to get cancer as a career cancer, and they're 14% more likely to die from cancer. So we've really focused on things that we can do to benefit our firefighters to keep them safe from and healthy from cancer. Some of those things have been doing some cancer screenings and having enough gear for them to wear. If they've gone into a fire, they don't have to put dirty gear back on to go into the next thing. So we keep their gear cycled out. The other thing that we really focused on this last year was mental health and wellness. We have a great EAP that we work with that helps us, and we also have a great peer support program that's going in the department that is really working, and we're focusing on resilience, because we really need people, good people, to do this job, so we need to keep them resilient and keep them healthy. So those are kind of the three big focuses that we've been working on. If you turn to page 5, you kind of see what our makeup of our special service district. We have a board of trustees that's made up of the mayors of the cities that we cover, and we have an administrative committee, sometimes known as the administrative control board in other special service districts, and they basically help us with our budget and keep us in line and go over our financials, and they help us out with financial future. So that's, if you go to the mission on page 8, just want to kind of go over what our mission is and what the staff does every day when they go get on the trucks and roll out into the community. Our main mission is to preserve life, protect property, and exceed the expectations of those we serve. So like I said in the beginning, we're extremely community focused, and I usually start every training with the captains and firefighters with, the only reason that the fire service exists is to serve the community. We're not here for any other reason, so let's focus on that when we go out, and hopefully we hit that nail on the head every day and we exceed those expectations. We serve 5 cities: North Salt Lake, Centerville, West Bountiful, Woods Cross, and Bountiful. We basically have everything from Beck Street up to the Farmington border, and due to the freeway access, one of our Centerville station goes all the way up to the Main Street overpass that goes to Kaysville. So we have quite a large area. On page 9, you can kind of see the organizational chart, how we're laid out. So under me, I have Jeff Larson as my deputy chief. There was another administrative deputy chief, and when I came in as fire chief, I made the decision to not do a second deputy chief, but to focus on the professional aspect of HR. So I've moved our finance director, who is Jessica Hardy. She has a master's degree in finance and a degree in HR. And one of the things I really wanted to do is focus on HR, because fire guys are great at a lot of things, but HR is not one of them. So instead of promoting somebody up into that position, I wanted a civilian HR to really keep things on the straight and narrow with us. So you can kind of see the breakdown there, and supervisors and who's in charge of who, and we'll go over like the divisions a little bit. So here's our station layout. You can see we have 2 stations, 81 and 84, in Bountiful. We have 2 stations in North Salt Lake, number 82 on Eaglewood Drive, and number 85 in Foxborough. The Foxborough stations are truck stations, so the big ladder truck you see driving around town comes out of station 85, and they are also cross-trained as our hazmat team. So they're pretty busy. We'll get into the hazmat detail a little bit later. And then station 83 in Centerville is our tech rescue station, and they do canyon rescue, high angle rescue, heavy equipment rescue, heavy vehicle on the freeway. On page 12, you'll see a picture of all the sworn personnel. These are the firefighters that are out on the street every single day. There's 97 sworn firefighters for us. And the thing that I love and what I tell them is special about the fire service is these people, they all come from different life experiences, different backgrounds, different education, and every single day they leave their homes and family to come and solve the problems of the community and use their special talents and abilities to do so. It's a great group of people. Every day we have 3 shifts, and every day we have 29 people that are staffed and responding to calls in the community. Our minimum staffing, we'll let that drop to 24, but we don't love to do that. So 29 is our goal every day. So here's a little breakdown of 2024. You can see the total calls for service was 7503 at the bottom. So this just kind of gives you an idea of how busy we are. To give you just kind of a frame of reference, in 2020, we had 7,200 calls. So you can see we're kind of inching up every year, a little bit more, a little bit more. You can see the breakdowns of calls by units to see how busy some of the units are. Ambulance 81 is our busiest unit, and that thing, they run a lot of calls, so that thing stays busy, rolling all the time. You may wonder, Chief Black already gave me a stat, asked me a stat that I don't have an answer for tonight, so I felt pretty good about this presentation going into it. But you you can kind of look down through the type of calls we do. It's basically 70% medical what we do. And then the fires are a few and far between, but that's okay. We train on them all the time. And everybody looks forward to fires, but we don't want to see anything, you know, we don't want to see anybody lose their property or their life. So it's okay if we don't have fires, but we're trained and ready to go for them. If you look at the EMS calls, we had 5,500, almost 5,600 EMS calls. And out of those, we had 3,577 ambulance transports out of that. So the ambulances stay pretty busy. You may wonder what our top five EMS calls, I just have it jotted down. This might give you an idea of our demographic in this area, but our number one EMS call is falls. So people falling down and needing help to get up. Number two is a sick person, which could be anything from not feeling well to dizzy and that kind of thing. Number three is auto accidents. Number four is transfers. So we do a lot of EMS transfers from facilities. So we'll take people from Lakeview to facilities in Salt Lake, or take them from Lakeview to their home or an assisted living facility. So that keeps us pretty busy. Number five is unconscious. So unconscious includes overdose, poisoning, that kind of stuff, just being unconscious. So, top five fire calls that we go on. Number one is vehicle fires. Number two would be, that's actually tied, vehicle fires and grass fires. Grass fires keep us busy. We're coming out of our slowest time of the year and just starting to ramp up. So number three is building or structure fires. Number four is cooking fires. And then five is power pole or electrical equipment fires. Just kind of a quick overview on page 15 about just other things that we do, keeping certified, 76 new certifications, 13,000 training hours, 11 promotions. We do business inspections, fires that we've investigated, and then we had three retirements on top of that. So pretty busy. I spoke a little bit about our finance director, and now she's HR. I call her our special little unicorn. She is so good at everything that she does, and she keeps the department really rolling. But she manages our budget right now. And so on page 17, you kind of get a breakdown of how we're funded. We have basically three funding sources: property taxes, city assessments, and ambulance revenue. None of those three self-adjust for inflation or the economy. So when we're getting low in our funding, we need to do something with city assessments or truth in taxation for a property tax increase. But you can kind of see what our expenditures were in 2024. Salaries and benefits is obviously the biggest one. And like I said, the recruitment and retention, salaries and benefits is very important for us to stay marketable so we don't lose people. Coming over to page 19, you have a little bit about our Fire Prevention Bureau. Our fire marshal is Cole Fessler. You can see his comedically shaped mustache on that picture. But Cole is the one that works with your building officials and all the developers in your area. So a lot of times, and I've said this before in my career, but if the fire marshal is making developers mad, then he is doing his job by enforcing code. All the codes exist because of fatal fire investigations. So when he's trying to enforce a code, there's usually lives that have been lost because of the background of the code. But they stay pretty busy. You can see the other things that they do. They do code enforcement, but they also do plan review. They do our fire investigations. So when we have a fire, we'll page out the investigators, and Cole is over all of our investigators and keeping them trained and keep them certified. We also do a high school intern program where we'll bring in two students a year that have an interest in EMS or fire, and they'll run with the crews, and our fire inspector, Travis Mander, heads up that program. And we've had, you know, I always get asked, do we hire these interns when they're done? Well, we haven't had any interest in that yet. They enjoy it. It's usually people that want to be an ER doc, or, you know, they want to go into the medical field, but we're keeping our fingers crossed that someday we get one of our high school recruits back in-house. Page 20 just shows you the different, the fire investigations team. These guys are all cross-trained as other things. So you have, most of them are captains, but they're all EMS, advanced EMTs or paramedics. but it kind of goes over the certifications that they have to do and just the dollar loss, you know, $11 million worth of dollar loss that they investigated in 23. Flipping over to page 23, this is Chief Larson. He's my right-hand man. He manages the day-to-day operations. So I said we had three shifts, and he manages the battalion chiefs that run those three shifts. And so there you have a battalion chief that's kind of like a sergeant in the police department, and they manage the captains underneath them, so five captains, one at each station. So there's kind of a lot of things going on every day, but this my right-hand man kind of manages the day-to-day stuff. He's also over our training division, so when we have an incident, he can identify training issues and work with the training division to kind of ramp up skills if he sees problems or anything that we need to address with equipment or procedure. Next page, page 24, is our EMS division. This is Trent Argyle. I don't know if anybody knows the Argyle name, but his dad used to be the fire chief of South Davis Fire before South Davis and Bountiful merged. He was a great guy, one of the best managers I've ever worked for, because he really, really cared about people, and that's rubbed off on his son, Trent. But Trent, his focus with EMS is keeping up on skills and certifications for the whole department, and quality and improvement. So he looks at all the EMS reports that are submitted and looks for ways that we can adjust training to benefit the community. So it's super important. You see the picture there of four graduates from the paramedic program at Weber State. We have an affiliation with Weber State where we will send our, what I like to say is we home grow our own paramedics instead of trying to hire a paramedic right off the bat. We'll bring people in-house up to Weber, and they get to do their education up there, and then they come do their rides with us for the paramedic program, and then they get to go on to be paramedics for this community. And it's worked out really, really well for loyalty and retention, and we really enjoy that affiliation with Weber. If you look at those pictures on page 24 down at the bottom, it kind of shows you the other stuff that we do, some adaptive response stuff that we've had to do now with RTF and working with the active shooter, active threat incidents. So you see fire guys or fire personnel there wearing like almost SWAT gear or riot gear. That's, you know, not something that we worried about when I got involved in the fire service, but that's definitely on the forefront. So every single one of those red trucks you see driving around has that gear on it now, just to kind of give you perspective of how things have changed and we've had to adapt. Training division, page 26, 27, just talks a little bit more about what training division does. We have a chief over the training division, and he has a captain that's the assistant that helps deploy training every day to these crews that are on duty. Over 13,000 hours, like I said earlier, but they also do a community or a county-wide, they're part of a county-wide training alliance, so we can take our crews and train with other county resources, because when the big one, we call it the big one, hits, we're, no fire department's going to be able to handle the big one by themselves. So we want to train with our partners up to the north and the south and be ready to go. So they do a great job with training. Logistics division 28, 29. We have an in-house logistics captain that kind of keeps all the fleet on the road. We have a mechanic that we contract with at Bountiful City that does our heavy mechanic work, but Mike Shaft, our logistics captain, he keeps the toilets flushing and the fleet on the road, so it's really good. He has a little stat in there about how many miles that the fleet ran in 2024, so 123,000 miles, that's pretty good, and almost 7,800 gallons of diesel fuel or unleaded fuel. So that gives you a little idea how busy the trucks are out on the street. Page 30, 31 has our hazmat team. Our hazmat team was just recently awarded Hazmat Team of the Year for the state LEPC. I'm pretty proud that the hazmat team was able to receive this award. They've come a long way as a hazmat team. So you see that big flare in the street there that's flaring off a propane tank that was leaking. So they have a ton of capabilities. They're actually part of a state region response that they'll go all the way up to Box Elder County to do hazmat. We went all the way to Enoch one Sunday for a spill that they needed some product identified, and we were the only hazmat team in the state that could do it. So when the state fire marshal says you're the best hazmat team in the state, that's nerve-wracking and a point of pride for me. But to know that we're the best out there is kind of crazy. So they do training all the time with the military, with the state fire marshal's office, with the Bureau of ATF to do explosives and stuff like that. Super fun. It's a specialty. And these guys do this specialty for no additional pay. So something that I think we probably ought to rectify in the future, but they just do it because they're interested in it and they're into solving science chemical problems. So it's kind of fun. 32, 33, this is our tech rescue team. You see the guy hanging off of the concrete thing. So this is heavy extrication. So they're drilling through concrete to then cut through that metal Connex box to simulate if they had to do a collapse or some sort of earthquake response or something they had to tunnel in to get somebody. So a technical rescue team run by our captain, Wade Rigby. He's also our training captain. We do trench rescue, we do industrial rescue, we do low angle canyon rescue up our canyons all summer long for what we call the lesser athletic individuals that go up there that shouldn't be recreating, but somebody has to go rescue them when bad things happen. So it keeps us busy. We love it. The tech rescue team, you can see in this small corner down to page 32, but they were able to participate in an industrial rescue challenge at Petzl in Salt Lake this year, where we had all these industrial teams come. There was even a team from Switzerland that came to participate in these games. And so they were tasked to do these 12 different rescue scenarios, and they had it handed to them. And the look of defeat on their faces in this picture is priceless to me, because they realized how much training that they needed to do, and it was priceless for them to be able to participate with those kind of level of professionals and see, you know, where they were and what skills they needed to work on and develop. And it's great. And it's a path for the future for the tech rescue team. So just on 34 and 35, we just have some significant and noteworthy incidents and recognition throughout the year. What we try to do when somebody has a significant life save or a significant incident goes really well, we try to identify them and give them some sort of award or certificate of recognition, just so they know that we don't just consider them just doing their job. That's what they always say. You hear fire guys or fire personnel. Sorry, I keep saying guys. You hear fire personnel on the news all the time, or news stories say, "Hey, we're just doing our job." And yeah, that's one thing, but they're putting their lives on the line and they're making saves, you know, or making, like why I say, you're making a difference every day. And a lot of people go to work and they don't get to say they made a difference every day. So, but these personnel do. Promotions and retirement. This is, you can see my promotion on that page 36, and then all the people underneath me that got promoted, like the paramedics, like we talked about the paramedic program, but then we had a couple of captains and some engineers. The engineers are the drivers for the red trucks that are driving around. We talked about the significant retirements that we had this year. You can see those years of service that left the department. And if we go to page 39, you have years of service on page 39. And out of the 97 sworn firefighters that we have, 31 of them have less than 5 years of experience. So that's why retention is so important to me. Because it's hard to, you can teach a lot of skills, but it's hard to teach experience. You have to go through it to experience that. So some significant retirements are going to come up. We have some guys with 30 years that are getting ready to retire. Page 40, 41, we have new employees, and then it says class 53 and 54 at the top. These are recruit academies that we put on with Salt Lake City Fire and Sandy Fire. We have a great affiliation with those two departments, and we're able to tag on to do recruit classes together. So this is a 15-week recruit academy. It's extremely grueling. They're just getting ready to get done with this last class, 55. and we're going to get 4 employees out of that. 42 and 43 just kind of gives you another idea of other things that we're doing. There's outreach, there's honor guard. Just recently, last week, there was the Firefighter Combat Challenge that came to Salt Lake City. And it's an international combat firefighter challenge. And we had a group of personnel that went and competed in that. And they did pretty well. They won for the combined team. So it was pretty fun to go down and watch. And just that environment of just everybody doing their best and working hard on the firefighting skills that they use in their career in kind of an obstacle course fashion was really, really interesting and fun to watch. So that is the conclusion of the presentation, and there's just some extra pictures that might stimulate some questions or comments, and I am open to anything you have.
Well, thank you so much, Chief. I was trying to remember, I think we did have a fatality the year before.
Yeah, the year before.
So it does happen, not very often, but that's probably the least favorite part of the job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody likes a good save.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You probably do also, Lisa. Well, one, thank you.
You're welcome.
That was great. And thank you for being so great at Hazmat with all of the refineries just to the west of us. That is so important. Tammy and I did the training last year.
Yeah.
So if city council doesn't work out for us, we'll think about this.
We know we have gear that fits you, so we'll get you right in.
Yeah, we're already set. We went to this League in City of City and Towns convention in St. George, and I was made aware that the state passed a bill talking about basically assessing all the high-risk homes in any area. And I know that we have a lot in North Salt Lake and Bountiful. I was just wondering how involved you guys have become in that and what the status is of that.
Yeah, so the status is there's still, we met today as state fire chiefs for our spring meeting, and the Forestry, Fire, and State Lands came and talked about House Bill 48. And there are still more questions than there are answers at this point. They said that they have at least 18 months of work to do for this bill. Right now they're working on the state rules and what that's going to look like. So that will go up for public comment on the state rules in November.
Okay.
But yeah, for us, there's still so many questions. They're talking about site assessments and doing these evaluations of properties and who's going to do that. You know, is it going to be us or is it going to be the county? How's that going to work? So that all needs to be figured out yet, what the fine is going to be. There's going to be a fee or a fine that if the property owner does a certain amount of mitigation, they can lower their fee or fine, but it's going to be annual. So it's something that people have to stay up on. And what the high-risk boundary looks like, they don't know. So and this is happening across the West. It first happened in Oregon where they did these risk maps, and then the insurance companies jumped on that. And then people were getting notices of non-renewal based on the risk map.
That's my concern.
Yeah, that's ours too. Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, that's the whole thing going down. The state has to figure out what that boundary is. But then I'll bring the LA fires into it. Altadena wasn't in a high risk area, and you know, 70% of that town burned down. So wildland is on our priority list. We want to be, we've had this culture in the fire service or in this area anyway, that wildland's seasonal. We only have to worry about it during the summer months. And our ambulances, they're also the brush trucks. So that's, you saw how busy those ambulances are. So that's super concerning that, you know, not all the time are we going to have brush trucks ready to go. We're better staffed than we've ever been this summer, so hopefully that's a better scenario this summer. But it's definitely something that we're prioritizing on. We haven't pumped the brakes on wildland throughout the winter. We've been training. We've been talking about the evacuation zones that we worked with the emergency manager to get going the last couple of years. So the next part of that project is evacuation routes. How do we get fire service personnel in while we get community evacuated? So working on that project next. But yeah, House Bill 48, I think there's still a lot to be fleshed out with that bill, and a lot more things in the interim session that are going to have to go, you know, open up a bill file and do some clarification work with that. So it's definitely something since that bill was introduced that we are paying very close attention to, because it's going to have a high impact on the fire department.
Yeah. And I brought up that very concern in the meeting. You know, you make a state data bank of all of the high-risk homes, and guess who gets dropped from fire insurance almost immediately? That would be my bet. And he didn't have any thoughts on that. So I found that interesting. So interesting, one of the HOAs up in Summerwood mm-hmm. is talking about hiring the goat guy. And I guess there's a goat guy that is booked out till August, goes to Deer Valley, Park City, and the goats just come and within a couple days clear the hillside. What are your thoughts on the goat guy?
So I went to a wildland conference in Vegas in March, and it was all about wildfire in the West. And there was a gal that was there, and she had 30 years experience with CAL FIRE, and she was actually the wildfire expert for the Biden administration. And she talked about just where we're headed with wildfire. And she talked about communities have to do something every single year, and for the next 50 years, hopefully that'll be enough. But that's the time frame we're talking about. We're talking about doing something in your community, whether it's the goat guy or whether it's a chipping program where you're removing underbrush out of the environment to decrease that fuel load. You have to do something every year. It can't be like, oh, hey, we're going to focus on this and then forget about it. It's that mindset change that, hey, this is here. We have just as high potential as they do in California up here on our hills. We just luck out. So we want to focus on more community risk reduction, what kind of fuels projects we can do. We had hoped to do a bunch of chipping programs this spring, and then all the federal programs fell away. So there isn't funding, there isn't resources to do that this spring. So we're looking at, as soon as we can hop back in that program, to get some projects started and do something every single year to decrease that risk. So.
And that guidance would then come from you as far as communities, or should it be coming from the city to the communities?
So it would be a combination between this agency as well as the city and our Davis County Fire Warden. Mm-hmm. That's the Forestry, Fire, and State Lands Connection, because they do certain modeling that indicates that, hey, maybe this is the higher priority. Everybody wants it done right now, but it's not possible to do it. So we need to focus on target areas where it can be the most beneficial right now, and then make plans for the future to continue doing that something that needs to be done every single year. It's interesting, because we did a chipping program last year in Cave Hollow area in Bountiful, and there were as many complaints as there were, you know, commendations for, hey, thanks for doing this. This really helps us feel safe. But there were so many people that were mad. So that's where I think that community mindset change has to come in, where it's like, mm-hmm. this is us. This isn't, you know, somewhere else. This is right here. Mm-hmm. This could easily happen here. So we need to do what we can as a community to get ready.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We're keeping an eye on it. So as soon as we know, you'll know. I just wanted to focus on, you mentioned the refineries, and I wanted to just tell you something you probably don't know. We're very fortunate to be a part of what's called the Salt Lake Valley Petroleum Mutual Aid Association. So we meet once a month with all these refineries. We get in a room and we'll do different trainings or tabletops, and just to see what they're doing as far as safety in the refineries, and ways that we can help and ways that we can train. They'll send our people for free to Texas to do industrial firefighting for a week. It's no cost to the taxpayer, no cost to us. So it's awesome training that you can't get anywhere else. So we're very fortunate to be a part of that. And where that really helps us out a lot of times is grants come up through these facilities. That we got a $49,000 grant for hazmat monitors this year through Marathon. And Marathon's not even in our area. So that's super interesting. But it's that affiliation, that's knowing it's knowing the partners, it's knowing the players that are going to help out the community. So, any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I always love this presentation and this overview, and I ask some of the same questions every time. One of them is about the refineries. Thank you for what you shared. Just as a resident that lives so close by, I want to know that things are being, and I know they are, but reassured that things are being monitored and managed. You mentioned in your presentation about, as we're all preparing for the big one, what that would look like when it hits these refineries as well that are right next to these residential areas. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. The second thing I will ask you every single time when you come is about fireworks and banning fireworks in different parts of the city. In our city, fireworks are banned above Orchard Drive, but not on the west side. And it every year comes up on neighborhood pages, and we probably have citizens come and ask us about why we allow aerial fireworks on the west side. And as a city, we've always defaulted to, as soon as the fire department tells us it's not allowed, we'll make a decision. But until then, we won't make any changes. So can you just speak to that for just a minute, fireworks and the decision-making for that?
Yeah, so that we don't really have any enforcement ability for that, to say that, that you can ban them. Or I don't even know that the city does have that, because I think there's so much legislative body that says whether or not you can ban or fireworks.
Well, they're banned over east of Orchard Drive, right?
So yeah, I just don't think you can ban it for the whole area. I think it was that what you were getting at.
Well, asking whether that's something we would want to do, but
I don't
but isn't
it
banned for the whole area
do.
East of Orchard
it is.
Drive?
It and is.
I think you can do it in certain high risk areas. I don't think you could just do a blanket ban. Like,
yeah.
I don't think you can say the
right.
whole city is.
Well, the justification would be only if it is high risk.
The justification is the high risk. And,
right.
and I think that these risk maps or high risk boundaries or whatever play into that. I think we can show with data how it's helped us decrease the amount of fires or catastrophic fires that we potentially could have had east of Orchard Drive. You're talking to the wrong person about fireworks. I hate fireworks. I can't stand it. We always try to push people to go do their fireworks with the city, you know, go watch the you know, Eaglewood fireworks and that kind of thing. I hate it from multiple standpoints. It's the high risk for fires, and it's also the injuries. So so for me to say, hey, fireworks are okay, it would probably be like Chief Black saying, it's probably okay you don't wear your seatbelt when you drive around town. You know, so I'm never going to say that I love fireworks and I think they're great. I think that they're, you know, the professional fireworks shows is what we always try to push people to go celebrate with. You know, I'm not trying to take anybody's freedoms away by saying you can't light something on fire, but it's that, for me, it's all risk. I worked 12 years in the ER, so I saw that side of it as well. And, you know, in the radiology rooms, they had these massive pictures of x-rays of people with their hands blown up. So for me to say that fireworks are okay, you know, but can we ban them? I don't think we can. But I think we can use prudence and say, hey, it's probably not great in this area. And I think that we can show that it's been beneficial to not have them in that area.
Well, speaking for myself and likely representing some of the opinions of the council, I don't think we would ban fireworks unless they were determined to be in a high-risk area. And if that message were ever changed or that decision was ever made, you would, I don't think, receive resistance here from that. But we'll see if that presents.
Yeah, and we use the state fire marshal's recommendations for our even our banned areas to make comment on. And I think if weather, you know, if drought conditions increased and it was a statewide ban, it would come from the state fire marshal's office through us. But
yeah. And then I have one last question that's very detailed, and it might not be the right place to ask this question, but there is a new development going in right next door to the fire station in Foxborough. Mm-hmm. And currently parking is allowed on the road in front of that, like it's maybe a third of a mile, a quarter of a mile before from Redwood Road to the fire station. And we're thinking about parking along there and if it needs to be prohibited. And my question to you is, do you foresee that would be problematic for the fire engines coming in and out of the neighborhood?
It is problematic right now for the fire engines. We have a brand new ladder truck down there, and they have to rake it through the trees. And, you know, it's not ideal for the fire truck right now. So,
great.
If
that's
there was
the question that, yeah.
And other than cosmetic, maybe that's not a huge issue because they can get through there, but it does do damage to the fire truck as they drive through. So we would love it if it wasn't there, but.
Aside from the trees, though, are the cars there? problematic.
If the cars weren't there, the trees wouldn't be a problem. So.
Okay, so because it limits the entire drivability area. Yeah,
it's,
great.
It's the width.
There's a question at large right now of whether or not their parking should be allowed right there. So that's helpful feedback.
Yeah, so right now the firefighters are using a different route. They try to avoid that area if they can and get back to the station on Cutler or whatever is right there.
Great, that's very helpful. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any other questions?
I don't have a question, but I just wanted to make a comment. I just am thankful for what you do and for all of us. And I think this is a book of heroes. I remember kids used to always want to be a firefighter or a police officer, and I hope that continues. I hope that kids still see this and want to do that. So thanks for all you do. This is like an annual to look at and to be proud of. So thank you.
I appreciate that. When the kids come to the fire station for a tour, I ask them, who wants to be a firefighter when they grow up? Raise your hand. And the ones that raise their hand, I'm saying, well, you can't do both. You can't grow up and be a firefighter, because we're all kids at heart. We all still like the shiny red trucks and the lights and the sirens. So, yeah, that's how we grow firefighters, is those tours.
And those new trucks are really fancy, got to say.
They are. They're very nice.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And,
yep.
Good
if you
work.
Ever have any questions, feel free to reach out.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Why don't we take a few minutes and approve minutes?
I did have one thing. I don't remember which minute it is because I forgot my iPad, but on line 212, Mathis Park is spelled with two T's, so there's a spelling error. Hmm. What's that?
That's good.
Well, I do read them, so there you go.
It's the April 1st minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that explains it. Yeah. It's just a joke.
It's just a joke.
You're the winner. You got the prize. I had to look it up to make sure I was correct. You do want it right, though, right?
Of course, yes.
You know, my minute experience, I've had Bruce Oblad, you know, he'll go through and that word needs to be hyphenated. That word needs a semicolon instead of a, you know. And then some of the boards, words are misspelled, sentences are nonsensical, and they're okay. It's like, you know.
The only reason I brought it up is because it's in the line a few up above it, and it's spelled correctly. So I thought, I would bet they want it correct.
Yeah, sure. Any other changes? Let's do the April 1st minutes first.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes of April 1st, 2025.
We have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. April 12th minutes.
I don't have any changes, and I found no misspellings.
That was almost a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion if we're ready to approve the minutes of April 12th, 2025.
And I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Both those minutes are approved. Why don't we take a break now and get started on time, just for a change?
Good idea.
I'm glad we talked today. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for calling. I'm consulting with my husband. Like, I don't know if it's me. It's probably me. It's always me.
No, it's not.
I know that I am intense, and I believe strongly about things, and I'm trying to make sure that people don't...